Hello, and this week it's the turn of the Red Team to bring you a late summer edition of our talking newspaper, which we do so with great pleasure, of course. Yes, indeed, news of our local area of glorious Devon, and hasn't it lived up to its name this summer? Our regular team leader, John, is away on his well-deserved summer break, engaging in, I believe, a variety of cultural pursuits in London and the South East. I'm David, the sports and language consultant of the team, and I'm joined by all our other regular members with their imposing suntans and their buckets and spades, ready for their annual dip in the sea and attempt at building sandcastles after this recording. Now, the last thing John said to me before his departure was something along the lines of, well, I suppose when the cat's away, so let's play a bit. Before they all went off on holiday or stayed at home enjoying the delights of the Costa Dawlish Warren, our team of ladies recorded a song in anticipation of their holidays. Well, it just had to be, we're all going on a summer holiday, didn't it? The old Cliff Richard favourite, naturally. Our choir is composed of an alto, soprano, mezzo-soprano and contralto, or something like that. So, here we go for your delectation, summer holiday. Ladies, please get ready now then, are you? And after three, okay? One, two, three.
We're all going on a summer holiday. No more working for a week or two. Fun and laughter on our summer holiday. No more worries for me or you. For a week or two, we're going where the sun shines brightly. We're going where the sea is blue. We've seen it in the movies. Now let's see if it's true. Everybody has a summer holiday, doing things they always wanted to. So we're going on a summer holiday to make our dreams come true. For me and you.
Oh, ladies, thank you so much for your melodious and harmonious rendition. Indeed, our producer, Camilla, today, standing in for Sarah, was literally bowled over by that, weren't you, Camilla? Thank you. This time of year is often described as the silly season as regards news and news content, and we're certainly going to do that in a moment. Before that, however, our team members are going to tell us a little bit about their holidays. Before that, just to get you in the mood, I'm going to ask the team of three one-liners. Now then, what did the sea say to the sand? No? Nothing. It just waved. Now then, I think you're going to like this one. Why did the scarecrow win an award?
No idea.
Why?
Well, why did the scarecrow do that?
Because he was outstanding in his field.
Oh, very good.
Oh, the last one. Just the last one now. Why did the bicycle fall over? Why did the bicycle fall over?
I don't know.
Why did the bicycle fall?
Because he was too tired.
Oh.
Well, now, we briefly go on to holidays. We will be doing the news a little later on, I promise. I stayed at home this year, and my principal distraction was, believe it or not, watching the Punch and Judy shows around the area and also playing the French game of what we called boule on the beach or pétanque sur la plage with the U3A group. It was great fun, simple pleasure. And on one occasion, a seagull ran off with our little Jack. It's a small cork Jack, and he ran off and flew right away with it. Oh, crikey, it got us all in a real flap. And on another occasion, putting the ball, so the jack, a dog came, trotted up, picked it up, ran off to his master with it. We were a bit worried that the dog might choke, but no, that he released it and it had a happy ending. Now, what about you? What about our team? How do they spend their holidays? What kind of holidays do they like? So, Anne, what about you?
Oh, goodness. Well, I've gone back a few years, just a few. My earliest memory of a holiday was when I was 4 or 5, and I went with my mum and dad and aunt and uncle by car to Cornwall. Being in the late 1940s, there were no motorways, and as we lived in Surrey, the journey took a very long time, almost 11 hours, I believe, and with no seatbelts, it must have been quite an ordeal for the adults in the back of the car with me, excitedly jumping up and down, and I certainly recall being told on numerous occasions to sit down for goodness sake. We stayed in a village called Whitstone, just outside Bude, on a farm run by a Mr. and Mrs. Ham, and I can still vividly remember the beautiful farmhouse and the farm buildings and going to see the cows being milked each evening. There were acres of grounds for me to explore and other children staying there too for me to play with, a novelty for an only child like me, and the beach was nearby. I was also very lucky to go on holiday as a child every year to places such as Eastbourne, Bournemouth, Devon, Cornwall and the Gower Peninsula in South Wales. Another holiday I vividly recall was in 1968, when with a friend, and her parents of course, I went on a package holiday to Mallorca, a fairly new and groundbreaking sort of holiday in those days, I can tell you. Other holidays when then living near Southampton were with my husband and 3 children in the 70s and 80s, when we visited places such as Swanage and Dorset and South and West Wales. In the 90s, we even ventured to France several times, enjoying holidays on various camping and caravan sites. Over the past 5 or so years, my husband and I have become somewhat addicted to river cruise holidays, as people in the Red Team will tell you. In various parts of Europe on the rivers, Seine and Rhone in France, the Douro in Portugal, and this year the Rhine in Germany and the Danube in Hungary. So all in all, I count myself as being very fortunate to have had so many very enjoyable holidays in my lifetime.
Oh, that's most interesting. Thank you very much. Anne, what about you, Molly?
Well, I had a staycation in Starcross with a spaniel this year. For 3 weeks, my daughter was on holiday in Canada, so she left me with the responsibility of looking after her adorable spaniel, which was, I thought, out of my comfort zone, but it was very interesting because being up at 7:30 and out in the fresh air when nobody else was about exposes you to nature in a way that I'm not normally exposed to it. And it was brilliant. The sensations were wonderful. The feeling of the breeze on your face and your arms, the warmth of the sun on your back, the sound of the geese flying overhead morning and evening with their honking noises is something that I wasn't used to. And altogether, it was really exciting. I loved the experience of going to take the spaniel for a walk. As soon as you opened the door, she would be absolutely over the moon. She would have such joy and such affection, and you felt this was really love. As soon as you left, her expression changed, and as all dog owners will know, that look of reproach was quite something. It was wonderful being out and walking along the path to Powderham. The majesty of the trees was beautiful. And it made me think of that poem by Byron, which says, "There is pleasure in the pathless woods. There is rapture on the lonely shore. There is society where none intrudes. I love not man the less, but nature more." And it really did make me appreciate nature and spaniels very much more than I had done.
That's so extremely poetic, isn't it, folks? And I think you ought to be poet laureate. I really do. And now we've got our chairman, Diana.
Well, my memorable holidays are really quite short because it was a bit surprising. It was one of my most memorable holidays was last July when I was on a cruise to Alaska, which was wonderful. However, we were in the Pacific Ocean with nothing around us, just a huge sea, and it was a beautiful day. However, we were in the Pacific Ocean and just the big sea, and it was a lovely morning, and I took my breakfast onto my balcony, then went outside to get my cup of tea. Went outside again, and two seagulls had pinched my breakfast. I was flabbergasted, and I thought these birds were following me from Dawlish.
Very droll. Excellent. And thank you very much indeed, Diana and Mary.
Well, yes, and I'm going back to Dawlish or Dawlish Warren, because that's the place that we always spent our family holidays. It's where my mother had grown up and where I was born. And every day, every summer, we went down to Dawlish on the coach from Gloucestershire. It was either the Royal Blues or the Midland Red. And we got off at Week Lane, walked up there to the Mount Pleasant Road where Granny lived. And every day we went down to the beach, my brother and I, early. So we could bag our own place on the rocks. We had the same place every day and we enjoyed the swimming. We had a picnic lunch and went back to the bungalow in the evening. Devon to us seemed a magic place. And one of the highlights used to be that my father bought something called a runabout ticket on the trains. And it meant for a week you could go anywhere in South Devon. And so we discovered other places like Dartmouth or Sawcombe or even Torquay. One of the most magical and exotic places seemed to be Dartmoor, where we loved walking and swimming in streams. I think it's called wild swimming these days, but it didn't have a name tag in those days. And on Saturday afternoon, you had to be wary of your place on the beach because people came down from Exeter, all the way from Exeter to Dawlish Warren, and they wanted places on the beach as well. But and one of the big events of those summer holidays was the fire at the Mount Pleasant Inn, where the place caught fire, and we went down to, I think my dad helped evacuate some of the furniture that was coming out. But I don't think there were any casualties, but it was a very big event. So for me, summer holiday is Dawlish Warren.
Great memories, Mary, and thank you very much, and thank you all very much for that. And now we do turn to our local news, starting with, I think, a story about anger, don't we, Molly?
Yes. Residents' anger over lorries on Dawlish roads. Residents claim construction lorries are continuing to use residential roads to access building sites in Dawlish instead of the newly opened Dawlish Link Road. The road, which had been promised more than a decade ago, was finally open to construction traffic to move hundreds of vehicle movements away from residential areas. But since the road was officially opened to lorries, residents complain they're continuing to see vehicles using the same roads. Timbridge Council said the road was open to construction traffic only from August the 18th for heavy vehicles accessing Taylor Wimpey's Brook Vale and Bloor Homes Dawlish View housing developments. A spokesman said, "This means no more lorries and heavy vehicles using Elm Grove Road, with all site traffic now accessing the developments from the north via the A379 Sainsbury's roundabout. We have worked closely with developers to ensure the Link Road is open to construction traffic before the school term starts in September. Improving safety for families near Gatehouse Primary Academy and Dawlish Academy. But so far, there have been numerous complaints every day that traffic is still not using the directed route." Another resident complained, "How can it be said to be open when it's not open to the public? It should have been opened before any construction was allowed to take place. Failing to do this allowed construction traffic to thunder down Elm Grove, endangered excuse me, endangered the school children and residents along Elm Grove. Timbridge Council, excuse me, responded, "We don't have a confirmed date for full opening yet, as that is dependent on more homes being occupied. It is understood opening the road to all traffic is dependent on 50 homes being occupied, and currently it's understood there are about 25. There were further reports of about 20 lorries using Sandy Lane instead of the new road in the space of about an hour and a half. Sandy Lane is currently being used by South West Water as part of its major scheme to improve water quality. Dawlish County Councillor Rosie Dawson says she's working with officers at Timbridge Council and the developers to ensure the new rules are followed. She explained an order has gone out for more signage and all suppliers have been notified of the new route. I've been talking with the two site managers who've been out to look at the issues. I am getting notifications daily. There are lorries still using Elm Grove Road. We need to be patient as the message gets through to drivers. The developers are frustrated, but they're working with me. The multi-million pound road is to access land for housing on the outskirts of Dawlish and ease traffic congestion in the town and along the A379. Previously, hundreds of lorries every day had been using Elm Grove Road to get to the sites. Passing Dawlish College and Gatehouse Academy and numerous residential properties along the way. Proposals for the road were first put forward when housing development was considered to the northeast of the town more than 10 years ago. It connects the A379 at Sainsbury's to more than 400 new homes at Seckmanton Farm and Swan Park, and access to approximately 400 new homes at Gatehouse Farm. And the next item is about underground water tank taking shape. The new tank being constructed in the centre of Dawlish is beginning to take shape. South West Water is currently installing an underground storm tank in the middle of the lawn as part of its multi-million pound scheme to tackle the town's water quality problems. The tank will hold up to 2,200,000 litres of storm water once the new system is up and running. This will allow more waste water to be stored at times of heavy rainfall, then treated, reducing the reliance on storm overflows in Dawlish. The tanks are part of the wider project for Dawlish by the water company, which also includes separating sewage from surface rainwater and fixing issues where groundwater is seeping into existing pipework, which is putting added strain on the network. Most of the town has a system of combined sewers, which means wastewater from toilets and sinks mixes with rainwater that runs off roofs, roads and the land. With increased rain, this results in a higher risk of storm overflows being used. The current scheme is planned to address the issues. Meanwhile, the town's safari adventure Crazy Golf is currently being ripped up. The attraction, which features Gary the Gorilla, opened in 2018 and will be closed until at least next summer season. It's understood Gary and his animal friends are being moved to safety for the duration of the work. The SWW scheme is aimed at tackling problems of insufficient capacity in Dawlish due to rapid growth, with additional homes being built along with climate change creating more pressure on the system.
Teignbridge stations join the Railway 200 Trail. Three Teignbridge railway stations are taking part in a new stamp trail. The trail has been launched in Devon and Cornwall as part of the Railway 200 and Cornwall celebrations, which commemorate 200 years of the modern railway. Ticket offices at 23 stations across the two counties, including Dawlish, Teignmouth and Newton Abbot, will have special Railway 200 stamps. Free stamp trail collector's sheets are available from station ticket offices. All people need to do is to visit participating locations, present their collector's sheet and collect the stamp. There are 33 stamps to collect, each one unique to its location. The trail has been put together and organised by the Devon and Cornwall Rail Partnership, a non-profit partnership between local authorities, the rail industry and the University of Plymouth, which works to promote and make the most of the two counties' rail network and especially the branch lines. Funding to make the trail possible has come from GWR's Customer and Community Improvement Fund. David Whiteway, Regional Development Manager for GWR, said this initiative is a fun and engaging way to celebrate 200 years of railway heritage while promoting rail travel and local tourism, and was one of the community fund projects GWR committed to funding this year. Richard Burningham, manager of the Devon and Cornwall Rail Partnership, said, "I very much hope the new stamp trail will lead to many people exploring our great local rail network to collect the stamps. What better way to celebrate locally the contribution the railway has made to the country since the first public trains ran in 1825?
RNLI tows stricken boat back to Shaldon. Volunteer crew from Tynmouth Royal National Lifeboat Institute, RNLI, were called into action last Wednesday, August the 20th, to rescue a boat with engine failure. A pager alert went out at 8:47 a.m. after Solent Coast Guard tasked Tynmouth RNLI to assist with a 4.5-metre rigid inflatable boat with one person on board. The vessel was experiencing engine failure and had begun dragging its anchor, an RNLI Tynmouth spokesman reported. Tynmouth's volunteer crew headed out on the Atlantic 85 lifeboat Claude and Cath and quickly located the casualty vessel around 1 mile east of Tynmouth Pier. Once they had assessed the situation, the crew decided to provide a safe tow back to Shaldon, where the boat was secured on its mooring.
Penn Farthing to judge Exminster Dog Show. Dog charity founder Penn Farthing is a special guest at a dog show in Exminster. The Pawsome Day Out will be a chance to finish the summer in style while raising money to help street dogs and cats in Sri Lanka. Former Royal Marine Penn founded the charity NOZAD after his experience with street dogs while deployed in Afghanistan. The fun-filled event has been organised by Lucas Helps Dogs, a small charity supporting dogs and cats in Sri Lanka, and Claudia's Canines, a professional dog walking business based in Exminster and owned by Claudia Pinn. Taking place on Sunday, August 31st at St Martin's Football Club, Exminster, the day will be raising money to directly support spay-neuter clinics, life-saving vaccinations and emergency treatments for animals in desperate need. Claudia said, "After visiting Sri Lanka, I was absolutely horrified. Seeing the suffering of the dogs and cats broke me, and I knew immediately that I needed to do something to help. I reached out to Lucas Helps Dogs, a UK and Sri Lanka-based charity, and together we began planning how we could make a difference. This is your chance to meet the man who has dedicated his life to rescuing animals from war zones and maybe even have your dog awarded by him. The dog show will be judged by Penn, and there's also a barbecue, competitions, auction and raffle, as well as a bouncy castle, canine passage, talks and photo box and stalls. Visitors to the show can also bring along donations to help animals the charity supports, such as collars and leads, muzzles and medication, such as flea and worming treatment. Dog toys and first aid equipment are also welcome. At the same time, donations can also be made for Sri Lankan children of sweets, colouring books and pens."
Tynmouth U3A now has in excess of 500 members and is one of the largest community groups in the area. We were delighted to be able to take part in last month's Tynmouth Carnival Week and join in the celebrations as this fantastic community fun event returned this year. Two of our interest groups were delighted to take part. Firstly, our shanty crew, known as One and All, took part in the Music Sunday event, where they performed and entertained by singing sea shanties in the marquee on the Den. They were joined by other community singing groups who sang to a very appreciative audience. And there's a lovely picture of the group One and All in high-vis jackets, looking very cheerful. And that is Tricia Forrester, Ali Paynton, Sarah Brown, Chris Inch and Pauline Dean. Our second group, Helping Hands, volunteered to assist the Carnival Committee with stewarding on the Thursday evening for the Carnival procession. Helping Hands consists of U3A members who are happy to volunteer and help on community projects and were delighted to be able to help the Carnival procession once again. For further information on Tynmouth and District U3A, please look us up at tynmouth.u3asite.uk.
Heritage Centre's new helpers. Two new gardening enthusiasts have joined as volunteers at the Teen Heritage Centre. Jude Featherby and Kevin Hadcroft are keen to make Tynmouth attractive to tourists coming into the town from the train station. It comes as volunteer Christina Siviter steps back from tending the green space outside the centre. Christina said, "A big thank you to all the visitors who have stopped to chat in the years I was tending the plants. It's great to know how much they appreciated the way the bedding brightened up our town. Sadly, after my accident at Christmas, my poorly knee made it impossible and the weeds got the better of me. Thanks to the council for cleaning them out and giving Jude and Kevin a fresh start."
The next feature is about Dawlish WI. Dawlish WI had a fabulous day at Dawlish Carnival earlier this month. On Sunday, the 10th of August, we were selling cake and our well-known tombola. We had a couple of returning holidaymakers who made it just in time to buy WI cake as they enjoyed it so much last year. This was Dawlish WI's second major baking session in 3 weeks, although for cars on the lawn, rain did stop play in the early afternoon. We would like to say our missing bowls can go away for a bit, but there are several more events over the next couple of months. Our mixing bowls can go away for a bit, but there are several more events over the next couple of months. And there's a picture of very cheerful looking ladies with their bakes in front of them.
A day out in Tynbridge. Tynbridge is a wonderful region with so much to offer, whether you're visiting Ashburton, Buckfastleigh, Dawlish, Newton Abbot and Tynmouth. There is plenty to choose from. With everything from nature spots and walking to food and drink to historic sites, there is something for everyone. If nature is what you're looking for, walks along the River Dart can be found in Ashburton and Buckfastleigh, while there is access to Dartmoor from both, as well as coastal walks from Tynmouth and Dawlish on the southwest coast path which runs through Dartmoor. If you're looking to explore the history of the region, check out the variety of museums they have to offer. Visit the Victorian Pier and Georgian buildings throughout Tynmouth and St Leonard's Tower in Newton Abbot, Town and GWR Museum in Newton Abbot. There are plenty of other activities to get stuck into in Tynbridge too, with Newton Abbot offering a vibrant racecourse, various markets and cycling routes around the town quay, while in Ashburton you will find an eclectic mix of independent shops and eateries. Plus, Tynmouth has the pavilions, arcades and a Lido for kids big and small. So what are you waiting for? Dive into all that Tynbridge has to offer, and there are three lovely pictures accompanying the article, and I heartily agree with the whole of that. It's a wonderful place.
Birthday celebrations for the farmers' market. The farmers and producers at the bustling Tynemouth Farmers Market invite you to help them celebrate their 11th birthday this Saturday in the Triangle between 10 a.m. and 2 p.m. Grab a free birthday cupcake baked especially for the market by popular storeholder Lisa from Tynemouth's own Patter Cake. Said David of Shute Farm and Produce in Bishop Stainton, farmer and grower of fresh fruits and vegetables, as well as preserves inspired from the farm. We want to thank all our loyal customers who support us every month. We couldn't have a market without them. Also at the market is Anna of Veggie Deli, whose freshly made vegan and vegetarian treats are a cornerstone of many a meal in Tynemouth homes. She says, "I always look forward to this market. Our customers are so friendly."
No, no permanent homes for Shoreden Holiday Park. Plans to provide permanent homes on a former holiday park in Shoreden have been refused. Tynbridge Council planning officers have rejected an attempt by the owners of Devon Valley Holiday Park to allow the use of caravans on the site as full-time homes. The council has confirmed that the proposed use of caravans at the Ringmore Road Park for human habitation, including as a sole or main residence, would not be lawful and would be in breach of existing occupancy conditions imposed under previous planning permissions dating back to the 1980s and 1992. In the decision notice, Tynbridge Council said, "The proposed use of caravans for human habitation of any type, including as a person's sole or main place of residence, would constitute a material change of use requiring planning permission." The decision follows objections against the move from both villagers and Shoreden Parish Council, which strongly objected to the application. It said to grant it would clearly be to allow a material change of use for the site. If a statement of planners, the parish council said, "The parish council notes that planning permissions granted on the site in the past have stipulated that residency would only be permitted between March and January, not all year round. Devon Valley has therefore been used as a holiday park only for many years, never for all year round residential use." A total of 10 letters of objection were received by Tynbridge Council, raising a number of points. It was claimed the change would be harmful to the local environment and that it was not clear whether the application was for proposed or existing use. It was stressed that the site had been used as a holiday park for many years and was always a seasonal business, operating from Easter to October, which is central to the character and function of the site. Objectors said the park would not support permanent residential use and that allowing year-round occupation would fundamentally alter the site's purpose and disrupt its intended use. The current owners had applied for a certificate of lawfulness claiming there were no conditions imposed on previous planning permissions and no enforceable condition on how the caravans can be occupied. But planning officers said it is considered the materially different level and pattern of traffic movements to and from the site and the changes to the character and appearance of the site, such as the introduction of permanent features such as fences and hedges to demarcate plots and ancillary domestic structures such as garden sheds, patios and decking, would be true at Devon Village Valley Holiday Village if the caravans were to be occupied for permanent residential use rather than for holiday use.
The Pride of Tynemouth. The streets of Tynemouth will be awash with colourful rainbow flags next weekend as the town celebrates its third Pride event. The family-friendly festival of diversity and inclusion will see 21 artists, bands and children's entertainers providing enjoyment for all. While many Pride events feature organised marches, the Tynemouth Pride format focuses on a festival of music and dance and a street party. Over the weekend, the main stage on Hollands Road will host an eclectic mix of acts including local choir Red Rock a cappella, drag act Giggy Sport Spot, and a show from children's favourite seaside characters Punch and Judy. On the Saturday, A street market will take over the Triangle in Tynmouth, and Tynmouth Library will host an all-age craft session in the morning to make rainbow heart sun catchers and hanging paper decorations. Sunday is focused on children and families, with street entertainers taking over the main stage and character meet and greets. Prides look different around the world, but it shares a purpose: to fight for continued recognition of the basic human rights for all LGBTQIA people everywhere. A Tynmouth Pride spokesman explained, "Tynmouth Pride is our version of a community-based event that is for everyone to be part of, that welcomes everyone, and is for everyone to enjoy," the spokesperson added. "We believe in our community coming together as one and supporting each other."
A Navy veteran battling cancer takes on Bulworth's challenge. A Navy veteran battling incurable cancer is to take on a marathon charity bowls match in support of the health team providing his care. Former chef with the senior service, 67-year-old Jim Harvey, will play 100 ends at his beloved Bitton Park Bowls Club on Saturday, September the 6th. The endurance challenge will take more than 9 hours and will see Jim walking around 3 miles. Voluntary paramedics and an ambulance will be on standby just in case the feat proves too much for the bowls mad Tynmouthian. Jim undergoes fortnightly chemotherapy and had his latest surgery just days ago. "The adrenaline will power me through," said Jim, who hopes to raise at least £1,000 for the Ricky Grant Day Unit at Torbay Hospital. "I'm also having chemo the day before, so they'll pump me full of steroids and I'll be like the Duracell bunny all day on Saturday. 4.5 years ago, I was inches from death and I just want to give something back. The staff at the Ricky Grant Day Unit have got me back on my feet again, got me bowling again. I've never seen the staff there complain about anything, and although it's not nice to have treatment, they make it as nice as it can be. But the funding they get is purely for the care. I want to help provide items that boost patient comfort, such as chairs and a TV. And this challenge is not just about me. This is the bowling community coming together to raise funds for, and for that I'm very grateful. Visiting players will pay to take part in Jim's challenge. Their contributions are being boosted by a raffle, cream tea, donations and loose change trail around the green. It's far from the first time that Jim has raised money for good causes, swelling countless charities' coffers over the years, courtesy of long-distance walks and other demanding activities. "He's always giving. If he had a quid in his pocket, he'd offer it to someone," said Bitton Park Bowls Club chair Bill Smith, who had to conduct a health and safety audit before giving the challenge a green light. "I'm overwhelmed by his efforts. He's an inspiration. The club is 100% behind him, and we're thankful for all the members who have volunteered to help make the big day a great success. The first end is due to get underway at 9 a.m., with a finish expected to be at 6:40 p.m. The event is open to the public. Jim's bowling challenge even has a celebrity backing, with 4 times world indoor bowls champion and Commonwealth Games athlete Rob Paxton due to drop in. Jim's sister Joanne has set up a Just Giving page to collect donations at justgiving.com/page/joanne-harvey/justgiving.com/page/ joanne-harvey-2. And there's a picture of Jim about to bowl. And he's looking great.
Our NLI volunteer has penned his third novel. The Tynmouth Royal National Lifeboat Institute volunteer has penned a novel based on the true story of a woman who devoted her life to saving lives at sea. Jason Mann, who writes as J.H. Mann, was inspired to write his latest novel, The Silver Tide, after hearing about a fisherman's daughter who devoted her life to sea rescues after seeing her father and three brothers die in a summer storm. Margaret Brown established her community's first lifeboat after losing her loved ones to rough seas in 1874. She took part in rescues for more than 50 years and was often seen hauling the vessel into the surf and recovering it after missions. I heard about Margaret Brown's tragic and brave story while volunteering for the lifeboat service and was immediately captivated, said Jason. I realized it could form the heart of a powerful novel. While Jason's novel is completely fictional, it was inspired by real events and real people. One significant difference is that The Silver Tide is set in Cornwall, whereas Margaret Brown's story took place much further north, in a Northumberland village of Cresswell, Jason points out. In The Silver Tide, the protagonist, Maggie Pascoe, is left destitute after losing her family to the sea. However, the tragedy is no accident. It's a story of love, betrayal, and one woman's fight for justice, Jason explained. The Silver Tide is set at a fascinating time in Cornwall's history, Jason said. The book is named after the vast silvery shoals of pilchards that brought great wealth to Cornwall each summer and autumn. A 28-foot lugger of the type mentioned in the novel could catch up to 30,000 pilchards in a good night of fishing. Even more effective was seining, which typically involved three boats working together with large nets. In 1851, off the coast of St. Ives, a pilchard seine net was estimated to have captured 16.5 million fish, weighing in at 1,100 tons. Sadly, even the huge fish stocks of the Atlantic had their limits, and by 1930, this once great industry had all but vanished. Jason's previous novels, The Echoing Shore and Hidden Depths, have won awards in the UK and the United States. Earlier this year, Jason won the Selfies Adult Fiction Award at the London Book Fair for his Cornish mystery, The Echoing Shore. Jason, who volunteers as part of the shore crew at Tynmouth Lifeboat Station, paid tribute to the many organisations and people who have provided help and advice for the Silver Tide, including the National Maritime Museum Cornwall in Falmouth, the RNLI and the Met Office's Meteorological Library and Archive. The book involved a great deal of research, and so I am hugely grateful to the many people and organisations who willingly gave their time, Jason pointed out. Their excellent advice helped me to bring an authenticity and accuracy to the story, which otherwise would have been impossible. The Silver Tide is available now on Amazon in ebook and paperback formats. The book cover was produced by MIBL Art, a Ukrainian company based in Lviv. And there's a picture of Jason Mann with a copy of his book by the true story of a woman who started a lifeboat station after losing her family in a tragedy at sea.
And here we have Another Busy Week Out and About by Martin Wrigley, MP. It's been another week of being out and about. I've done pop-up events, spent time door-knocking around the area, hosted a surgery at the Alice Cross Centre in Tynmouth, and visited local businesses and more. One big issue locally is the expansion of the ball clay extraction by Sibelco in Kingstainton, which is worrying residents. I have had meetings with various parties about the proposed expansion of quarrying. I will be making sure that local concerns are heard and addressed. I've enjoyed doing pop-up events around the constituency, including Tesco at Kingstainton, Co-op in Kinkaswell, and Tynmouth Market. It was lovely seeing so many of you and having the great opportunity to chat. So often, an MP is seen as a very formal figure, distant and unapproachable. That is a view that I wholeheartedly disagree with. I was elected to be your representative and voice. I cannot do that effectively if I am locked away in an office. We are planning more pop-up events before the winter weather arrives, and please do come and have a chat if you see me. The same goes if you see me at an event. I'd be delighted if you come over and say hello. I had a lovely visit to Animals in Distress, a fantastic animal charity that specialises in rehoming pets, not just cats and dogs, but small animals too. Their centre is in Ippelpen, where staff and volunteers look after the animals in their care. They work hard to match their animals to the right homes to ensure the best life possible for the pets when they leave the centre. We discussed their work and how the cost of living crisis has seen their numbers increase dramatically and how they are managing that. If you are thinking of adding a pet to your family, I would urge you to consider looking at the various rescue centres around the area. Any animal that is rehomed by Animals in Distress will be neutered, vaccinated, fully health checked, and the staff will have assessed their temperament and will be able to advise which pet will fit best into your family. Adopt, don't shop. I visited Broadhempston Land Trust, a community building project run by local villagers for local villagers. The group in Broadhempston was founded due to families and young people not being able to afford to purchase houses in the village. Broadhempston is facing the same issues found in a lot of small villages in the country. House prices increasing above what is affordable for most people, younger people and families having to move out, and village amenities such as schools, shops and pubs closing. The Broadhempston Land Trust is hoping that their community project will help reverse this trend and provide a great model for other areas to adopt.
Students across Teignbridge discovered how they had fared in their GCSE exams last Thursday. Students at Coombs Head Academy in Newton Abbott were in exceptionally high spirits as they collected their results. Helen Coulson, head teacher at Coombs Head Academy, said, "This is a group of students who showed real grit, determination and perseverance. It wasn't always easy, but their commitment has truly paid off." Leaders at Ivy Education Trust celebrated the achievements of students and staff at Dawlish College, Newton Abbott College and Teignmouth Community School. TCS head teacher Rachel Wickham said, "These results reflect the hard work and commitment of students, staff and their families over a number of years. They are also a visible measure of the significant improvement in the quality of education provided here at Teignmouth Community School." Her view was reflected by Dawlish College head Sam Banks, who added, "I'm delighted that the vast majority leave us with the qualifications they need to take their next steps. I hope they go on to live lives full of choice and opportunity."
Olympic spirit heads to the Holden Hills. More than 80 wannabe athletes descended on a tiny Teignbridge village on Sunday, August the 24th, to flaunt their sporting prowess in the Ashcombe Olympic Games. 8 teams of 10 competed in events including the hay bale roll, tyre flip, blindfolded wheelbarrow race, and the three in a sack race. The Ashcombe Olympics started a few years ago, and the Games were designed to take place during Olympic years. However, the event proved to be so popular, it has become an annual fixture. The Olympics is one of several events organised by the Ashcombe Village Club to raise money for charity. Last year, the Ashcombe Village Club distributed £9,500 to charities, farming funds and local groups, ranging from Dementia UK to the local church. And since 2012, Ashcombe has distributed over £125,000 to local charities and good causes. And there are some wonderful photographs of people here pushing enormous bales of hay, enormous tyres, and somebody with an egg and potato race. But they all look extremely happy competing. And finally, I've got two death notices here. One is Joan Brignall, aged 99, passed away peacefully at Torbay Hospital on the 16th of August 2015. And then there's Anne Harding, devoted wife of Andrew Harding, passed away peacefully at home on August the 18th, 2025. A celebration of her life will take place at St James's Church, Tynmouth, on Friday, September the 5th at 12 o'clock. Please wear bright colours. Barry Haywood sadly passed away suddenly and unexpectedly on Saturday the 9th of August in Dawlish. He was the much-loved partner of Jackie, beloved brother to Anne, Veronica and Kevin, uncle to Mark and Susie, and great-uncle to his nieces and nephews. A funeral service will be held at Torbay Crematorium on Tuesday the 2nd of September at 11:30. All are welcome to attend, and the dress code is please wear whatever you are comfortable in. We just want you to be there.
And to end with a potpourri of other information, we have just received a message from Devon in Sight Loss, whose conference is taking place at the Rougemount Hotel in Exeter on Thursday the 18th of September, which will give you lots of information if you attend. If you suffer from sight loss, the cost is £12, otherwise it's £15. It takes place between the hours of 7:30 a.m. and 3 p.m. Now, importantly, bookings must be made before the 5th of September on 01392 878802. I repeat, 01392 878802. And another piece of information, we've only just heard about this. On Sunday, the 7th of September, at around 3 p.m, everyone who has a mobile phone will receive an alarm call. This will probably last around 10 seconds. I think we had this before, and if I remember correctly, not everybody got it on their mobile phones. But that's on Sunday, the 7th of September, at around 3 p.m. On Monday the 1st, the book club for the visually impaired meets at Dawlish Library at 2 p.m. There's also a coffee morning run by the WI at Dawlish Methodist Church at 10:30 a.m. That's Monday. On Tuesday, Dawlish Community Transport are going to Totnes. And on the same day, Dawlish History Society meets to hear a talk about the wartime history of Exeter Airport. That's at the Manor House at 2:30 p.m. Now on Wednesday, Kenton WI meet at 7 p.m. for a talk on Dartmoor, land of lore and legend. And also, don't forget, just one more week until our birthday party, and I'll come back to that in a moment. And on Friday the 5th, there's an illustrated talk by Jane Perkins at the Kenton Victory Hall at 7 p.m. Now, we sometimes get asked about talking books. The RNIB have talking books available on USB sticks, which you can listen to on your players. Contact the RNIB on 0303 123 9999. That's 0303 123 9999. Or contact Dawlish Library, who will help. Their number is 01626 862 529. Now on Tuesday, the 9th of September, Dawlish Community Transport are going to IKEA and Dunelm, and that costs £12.50. Dunelm, one of my favourite shops, I have to say. On Wednesday the 10th, yes, our birthday party. On Friday the 13th, wine tasting at Kenton Victory Hall at 7 p.m. And that's the for the wines of St. Lambert, or should it be Saint Lambert? Oh, I haven't got a clue. And that way it's France, so it's Saint Lambert. The tickets are £15. And they're available on this number, 07960103394. That's 07960103394. Sunday the 14th, it is Devon Historic Churches Trust and Heritage Open Day. And one of the events is at Powderham Church, open between 1 p.m. and 5:30 p.m. At 2 p.m. there's a talk by the Earl of Devon, and at 3 p.m. talk on buildings with actor Paul Jessen. There will be musical interludes and cream teas, I hope done in the Devon way, of course. And that's free entry. Well, I think that's just about all for this week. I'm sorry we haven't included anything about the programmes at the pavilions or the Shaftesbury Theatre, but I'm sure our thespian John will be dealing with those when he comes back next time. It only remains for me to say how much we've enjoyed doing this for you today, and for you to have met our team in a more personal way. If you wish to contact us about anything, for example, Our Lady's Chorus and their rendition this morning, or anything at all, it's 07376 147374. They need all the encouragement they can get before their next appearances at the Royal Festival Hall and the Albert Hall in London. And don't forget that special 10th anniversary party on Wednesday the 10th of September, when the kettle will be singing merrily and the cakes will be on the table from 2:30 to 4:30 p.m. We'll all be there. Do join us. So it's au revoir from Diana, our chairman and dispatcher, our readers and choir members, Mary, Anne and Molly, and our guest producer, Camilla. So it's au revoir from us all. Goodbye.
Bye.